Breakfast with Martin Pastor.
A lot of people's timeline yesterday and kidnapping of another child in South Africa. Fortunately, if you didn't hear the news, she has been returned to her family safely in the early morning hours. We thought, you know, it's a good time to get Professor Gerard Labuschagne, an investigative forensic psychologist, many years working alongside the police, investigating and solving various cases, also a trained hostage negotiator, as it turns out. Thank you so much for your time and joining us once again on the show. Good morning.
Thanks again. Thanks for having me.
You're never here in happy times, really. Sorry about that, but that is how the world goes. Another horror story that fortunately has a happy ending. The girl is safely back with her parents. Just before we get to the specific case, and before we get to the red flags, things you can look out for as a parent, how common is this? It feels to me like it's becoming more and more common. Child trafficking, kidnapping of children, children disappearing, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, we don't have great stats because I think a lot of these things don't get reported to the police. And also, there's different types of kidnapping of children for different motives. Probably the most common motive actually is kidnapping a child in a custody dispute situation.
Right.
Specifically, we have parents from two different countries. That's the most frequent. And we also have to understand that kidnapping, we always think of kidnapping as this kidnapping and ransom scenario. Mm. But if you look at the legal definition, kidnapping is actually very broad. I mean, if someone was to lock us in this very room that we're sitting in against our will, that actually fulfills the definition of kidnapping. So it's not always got the ransom aspect to it.
Okay. Is that maybe why the police are using, I heard now in the news, they used the word just to grab. Someone grabbed her.
Well, look, the technical definition in South Africa is unlawfully intentionally depriving a person of their freedom of movement. So in other words, if you are hijacked in your vehicle and you're taken with the vehicle, that's a hijacking and a kidnapping. Even if they release you two blocks down the road with no demand, you've been kidnapped as part of that. Or a serial rapist who offers his victim employment and lures them away into the veld and then rapes them, that's rape and kidnapping. So the actual kidnap for ransom for children is actually not that common. It's what we typically would see is when there's a debt owed. And I'm not saying that's what happened in this case. I'm just talking about the typical scenario of why a child will be kidnapped for ransom. It involves very often a debt, sometimes a straight opportunistic criminal who's just, you know, sees this as an easy target for a wealthy parent.
What do you think happened in this case? She was returned in the middle of the night.
Yeah, again, we know, and I think the cops are right to be tight-lipped about what happened and what they've done and what they've not done. It could have been a ransom it paid. It could have been that the suspects just released the child.
Did they ask for a ransom?
I think in the media it was saying so. I have no insider information, so I'm only speaking about what's in the newspapers. Mm. I read also a 2 million ransom. Whether that was paid or not, of course, we're not sure. Whether it was the full amount that was paid, if a ransom was paid at all, again, we're not sure.
Does it help or doesn't it help when something like this goes viral? Does social media play a role here?
It doesn't. It's not helpful. You know, in a crime where someone was murdered and you want a lot of attention for people to come forward and give information, etc., that's helpful sometimes. But in kidnapping cases, quite frankly, the last thing you want to do is actually put it all over the media and have family members speaking about what's happening.
You
don't want that.
Why?
A couple of reasons. Specifically, not talking about only child kidnappings. Specifically with adult kidnappings, it actually increases the value of the hostage. So the hostage takers realize, wow, you're actually perhaps more important than we thought. The whole community, and it's in the media, there's an uprising about you being kidnapped. Hey, we can jack up the price. And they'll just say, you know, we asked for $2 million. These people are unscrupulous. So they'll say, although we asked for $4 million, we want $5 million now. Because you can all these people who are protesting up in arms about you being kidnapped, they can contribute some money.
Don't you think it strikes a bit of fear into the minds of the kidnappers? Where they maybe say, oh, now the whole world knows about it. Isn't there an element of that? Maybe?
It'll depend on the level of professionalism. Your very professional kidnappers do not fear being caught. If you look at these kidnappings that took place over the past 3 years in South Africa, we're talking about the $50 million type of ransoms. These are professionals. These people are professionals. They haven't been caught. None of them have been caught. They don't fear being caught. So this is not going to induce fear upon these individuals.
It's not going to put pressure on them to say, listen, let's get out of this scenario.
But
give the child back.
No, absolutely not. But what it does do for the perhaps the lesser experienced kidnappers, it makes them incredibly anxious. And then they have to decide, do we cut our losses? And cut our losses could be we just let the child go. The cut-off losses could also be we kill the child because it's easier, we can cover up the evidence and reduce our chances of being caught. So that's why for the high net value targets, it can increase the price, and for the lower, less professional people, it actually endangers the lives of the actual victim. So in general, it's not helpful for the police negotiation or the police investigation, because it's two different processes, to actually have a lot of attention.
You know, I think we've lost so much trust and confidence in some police, not all police, that we almost feel like we need to get involved. Isn't there an element of maybe creating more awareness? You know, did you maybe see that car? Are you living next door to these people? Wouldn't social media, when it goes viral, wouldn't it help with that?
I think definitely to get the message out there, if you've seen something, please... Yeah. This is the contact person, Captain So-and-so.
So in that way, for it to go viral and people talk about it on social media, could be a good thing. But you're saying overstepping that line, when family members start talking out, that's where you draw the line.
Yeah. So basically, a call for information, yes, and then kind of that's it. And let the police do their job. They always will get hostage negotiators involved in any, well, they should. The policy is that any time that is reported to a local police station that a child has been or anybody's been kidnapped, the hostage negotiators are supposed to be involved, and they play a very incredibly important role, and SAPS hostage negotiators are very well trained. I have great faith in them. That's one of the few units left in the police that I have. I was trained by SAPS as one, so I have great faith in the SAPS negotiators, and I would always say yes, it's better to go to them and get them involved. And a negotiator's role is to get the victim back alive. The investigator's role is to try and catch the suspect.
Two different jobs.
Whether that's during when they have the victim still in their possession or afterwards, and that's two separate roles. But the host negotiator, I just want to get this person back. No matter how we do it, but I want to get this person back
alive. Just quickly, how does this happen? Kidnappings. Is there a commonality? Is it something that these hostage takers plan for a long time in advance? Do they watch them? Do they know the family very well? Or is it random?
Your ones where they're asking for significant amounts of money, like your 100,000, millions, etc., are usually pre-planned, because it doesn't help you snatch someone off the street and it turns out to be an incredibly poor family that can't afford to pay you whatever you want. So what you find is you get, again, different types of kidnappings. You get your express kidnappings where literally people will grab a person and take them to the ATM and say, withdraw all your money. And that could be $100, $1,000, and we release you. When you're talking about more your larger amounts, it tends to be a pre-plan. They tend to know who they're going after. They think they do are able to pay whatever they want, or at least within that spectrum of money that they've asked for. And that's going to be a targeted thing where they would have probably checked you out. They're going to choose a moment where that suits them to their best advantage, that people aren't going to see them. So snatching someone outside of a school, that was quite unique for me. There's typically lots of people around. The parents are there, etc.
Is it a strange scenario to you?
I think that aspect is unusual, but that's not to say that there's something suspicious on, for example, the family side. It's just not what one would typically expect, that it's such a brazen grabbing, snatching in front of other people from the parent. That did strike me.
And these kids that just disappear. I mean, what is the situation?
Well, if there's not a demand for money, then we typically say, is the motive for that kidnapping perhaps one of a sexual motive, like we see with our serial rapists and our serial murderers who, again, lure this victim away. And typically those children are ones who are not having parental supervision. But then it's not, that suspect isn't targeting a particular person.
It's just
they are out looking for someone. This is the person that comes across their path, and it's the right type of victimology.
Professor Gerard Labuschagne on the show. He's an investigative forensic psychologist, worked on many grim cases over the years, also trained hostage negotiator, just understanding more about this hostage taking situation. And I think a lot of parents are listening this morning because they want to know more about how to keep their children safe. What do they look out for? What are the red flags? And if not hostage taking, what is the biggest threat to South African children today?
Look, I mean, although these things are very emotive and like this one gets in the media a lot of attention, as other cases have in the past sort of year in South Africa, your kids are probably not going to ever be the victim of this type of crime. They're more likely to be victims of sexual molestation from a family member than, statistically speaking, than ever becoming the victims of a kidnapping or opportunistic criminals who want to rob their cell phone or sexually attack them sexually. So those are really the more you know, you should be focusing on those first. The possibility of kidnapping second. Yes, I think if you are, if you have a very, for example, very successful family business, you know, you might want to get a review of your security because you are potentially a target for kidnapping, whether it's your children or you or a family member for extortion purposes. And that's what we've been seeing in South Africa over the past 2 or 3 years, where these very successful, you know, family businesses are, you know, the father, it's usually the males are getting kidnapped. And, you know, as I said, like $4 million ransom types are being asked of these individuals.
I think most parents are constantly checking themselves. Am I doing enough? Am I seeing any red flags? Can I prevent my child from going through something like this? Could I keep my children safe? Are there things that parents often get wrong and overlook that are obviously that they're in front of you?
Yeah. So if I put aside the kidnapping stuff, I think it's personally,
in general,
having an open relationship with your children where you talk to them and let them know that it's safe to tell you anything. You know, a lot of kids might go to their parents and tell them something, but the parents don't believe them. Uncle so-and-so would never do that. So definitely having an open talking relationship with your children and listening to them when they do raise these issues and responding. That's probably the best way in terms of those types of things that are going on in your child's life. And whether that child's going to be ending up in drugs or having a difficult romantic relationship with someone, you really would like your child talking to you about those things. They're not. Because otherwise they make the decisions on their own, which might get them into trouble.
Social media is a big thing, especially when it comes to children. How much do kids give away on their social media? How involved should parents be with their kids' social media platforms?
Well, I think anybody in this country should probably attend a talk by Emma Sadler. I've been to two of her talks about social media and teenagers, and my mind was blown. So yes, you do. If someone wants to target you for whatever reasons, whether it's kidnapping or kidnapping for sexual purpose or extortion, what we post on social media is a great way to find out what people are up to. You know, we post that we are here now at this restaurant, or people start to pick up that you like to go to a particular nightclub. You just really make it easy for anybody to stalk you, track you down, if they want to do something bad to you, harass
you. Everybody knows where you are these days all the time because we tell them.
Exactly. You know, I'm here eating at this restaurant. Well, great. Now I know if I get there in the next 30 minutes, I can probably find you there. Or my new car that I bought and you've got your license plate shown. So we really do have to every now and then check your social media. And again, that's why talks by Emma Sadler, or just going online and look, Googling, you know, social media security is a good idea.
You said just now that this particular case, the Funabel girl, the child, it's unusual because they grabbed her from in front of the school. And somehow for me, it seems like all our parents over the years were always worried about that grabbing in front of the school thing.
Yeah.
And you're saying that's the less common way.
Yeah.
Where are the danger spots that parents might be overlooking and underestimating?
I think if you're being targeted for a kidnapping, they will find what your weak spot is. So that would be different for different people. For some people, it might be they see the child goes for a walk on the beach with the dog every day, and they'll realize that's the time I'm going to do it. But you might have fantastic security all the other times, or there's always accompanied by a parent to and from school, or if the kids go out at night, the parent is always there. If you're being targeted, they'll find a weak spot. Again, so if you look at the adults that were kidnapped recently over the past 2 or 3 years, these businessmen, they were always alone, always driving by their cars in an area that's not a great area or an area that's relatively deserted, because they're going to choose a time that suits them best. So again, and that's often where there's not witnesses around. Most of these people who are kidnapped, there weren't very often witnesses around.
Just the last question, and veering off the topic for a moment, there seems to be a lot of clandestine hits, murders taking place in our cities, specifically Johannesburg and surrounds lately. How on top of the police are they? I mean, the police, how on top of these cases are they really? Well, it feels to me that a lot of these things just kind of go away. We never hear about them again because they can't find the killers. Are the killers too professional? Are the police not equipped enough to solve these cases? What's the story? Because it just seems so in our faces, you know, in the speculation. Or are we just speculating too much?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not sure what's going on with those types of cases. But as soon as you get organized crime involved, it's called organized crime for a reason. They tend to be professionals in what they do. So it will be, by definition, more difficult to catch someone than a husband who gets angry and shoots his wife.
Do you think the police will ever get these guys that kidnapped the school yesterday?
I'm leaning more towards the yes, because it doesn't seem, just again, not knowing the inside facts, but it doesn't seem as professional as, for example, some of the other cases that have been taking place in the country. So the very professional ones that are targeting the wealthy businessmen, they've not arrested a single one of these guys.
Not one of them.
They've all been negotiated out into release, so that's great.
And then they disappear.
But nobody's caught these guys. So it depends on the level of professionalism.
Why are you saying this one wasn't very professional?
Again, I think if you would do it, again, targeting children, you know, over 70% of the victims kidnapped are adults and males. Doing this in front of a school, it just doesn't, in letting people see your vehicle and four suspects jumping out, which is what the news was reporting. You're exposing yourself dramatically to evidence that people can follow up on.
Thankfully, they've exposed themselves. Thanks for popping in. Appreciate your time. Professor Gerard there. Sorry, before I let you go, I completely forgot. I'm rambling off here, my questions.
Hi, Martin and team. So, do we help these children and arm them with something like pepper spray or anything like that?
How do you protect children? Do you give them stuff like that?
I think for the most best way to protect them is with knowledge beforehand. You know, how to behave, to be aware of their, socially aware of their surroundings. Like I said, from social media to, you know, when you're out and about, do kind
Look
of pay attention.
You. What's you happening know, around you?
At a certain age, at least not a smartphone if you don't want to, but a normal phone that they can contact you. Smartphones do have the advantage of having certain emergency apps like Yusuf Abramjah's, the Namola app, which is pretty, very handy. Pepper sprays, again, every time you're going to give yourself, your child, or any person a weapon, which is what pepper spray is, it comes with the responsibility of understanding how to use it, when to use it, when not to use it. And if that child is responsible enough to understand that, then that is definitely a possibility.
Knowledge is power. What do you do when?
And
what
also
do you do in the situation when?
To say to people, you know, but if someone's want to steal your cell phone, don't fight it. You know, give it to them.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that can be easily replaced. But getting into a fight with someone over something as silly as a cell phone or even your wallet that they want to take is not worth it. It's really not worth it based on what that person could potentially do to you.
Julle het vroeër gepraat oor hijackings waar hulle met die kinders wegry, wat ook gesien word as 'n kidnapping. Wat kan 'n mens doen in daai geval? Ek het twee klein kinders wat altyd in karstoeltjies is. Hoe negotiate, hoe praat jy met hulle om hulle te oortuig dat jy eers jou kinders uithaal, veilig uithaal voordat hulle wegry? Wat doen mens?
That's a very important question, and you as a trained hostage negotiator, as a parent, how do you handle the situation?
And that's probably one of the most horrific situations. Someone's telling you to get out of your car and you've got your little kids, or any kids in the car.
And they drive, and they want to drive off with the kids.
You know, it's easy for me to say, remain calm and try and tell them, I will get out, you can have my car, you can have everything, I just want my children. I don't think a hijacker wants to drive away with your children if he's there for the car. What does he do with these children?
Yeah.
Unless you're being targeted for a kidnap.
Yeah.
So I do think if you remain calm and say, I'm cooperating, you give every indication that I'm cooperating with you, you can take my car, there's my cell phone, I just want the children, let me get the children out the back. But I can say as a parent, if someone wanted to ride off with my kids after all that, I'd like to think that I'd fight to death not to let that happen.
Do you stay in the car until your kids get out?
Yeah, I would definitely climb in between the seats and try and get them out. But I would, getting out the car, you just increase the risk the person's going to drive away. But
because
again,
they might get anxious, forget that they've got the kids in the back. Mm-hmm. Do you keep reminding them, my kids are in the car, I'm getting out with my kids?
Yeah, and of course, no sudden movements, hands where they can see, because they're going to be afraid that you're going to pull out a gun or try and harm them.
Is that why you say people need to remain calm? Because at the end of the day, you need to remember that the people who are committing the crime might also be anxious.
Incredibly anxious. They might be on drugs. They might be under the influence.
So the reason why a negotiator will tell you to keep calm is so that you don't frighten them, you don't get them to react irresponsibly, or just drive off with your kids in the car.
Yeah.
Remain calm, get out with your kids, or make sure that you make them understand the kids are there, they can have everything else.
Yeah.
Everything else. Thanks for coming in, appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Really do appreciate it. And we'll do this again. I know a lot of parents listen to the show, and you have a lot of questions, and thanks for the questions coming in.
Breakfast with Martin Vester, driving you to work every weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Jacaranda FM.